Today on Radio Gorgeous, we're here to talk about an amazing woman who's a bohemian, a lover of the East, a free spirit, an artist, a traveller, a wit and a writer. She wrote for Vogue, The Observer, The Sunday Times. She died aged 103 in 2007. Her posthumous memoirs were published by Virago in 2015, On the Wild Shores of Love, A Bohemian Life. Her name is Leslie Blanche, and her writings have inspired many contemporary women writers. I'm here to be here with Georgia de Chambéry, who is Leslie's goddaughter, to talk about Leslie's latest book, Far to Go and Many to Love, People and Places. So hi, Georgia. Welcome to Radio Gorgeous.
Well, welcome. Thank you. Thank you for inviting me.
It's an absolute pleasure. So you wrote a long introduction about Leslie at the beginning of a book entitled Last of a Kind, and I was spellbound, I still am, by her story. In fact, I was wary of reading her writing as I did not know whether her extraordinary life would live up to her writing and it would eclipse her writings. But no, as soon as I read Anti-Beige, her article which got her job on Vogue, I was seduced.
Yes, well, Anti-Beige, she preferred, as she put it, colour and the woman of scarlet. She thought beige, everything being beige and white, was rather uninspiring and rather tedious. And to think that she wrote that in the 30s, and it kind of still holds
holds
now.
Totally.
But her whole style of dressing and her whole style of decorating her home was anything but beige.
Can you tell her a typical outfit she'd wear then?
Well, because she travelled a great deal, so she wrote about the Far East, the East and Russia, but she also travelled there herself, so she kind of lived, she also lived in a way her dream, what was her initial dream, to go out there. And she brought back amazing clothes and also things, junking. She was a great one for going to all the souks, and actually in the book there's a piece, The Wilder, what is it, The Wilder Shores of Souking, or anyway, something along those jokes about her famous book, The Wilder Shores of Love, of course, spawned all kinds of the Wilder Shores of Westminster and the Wilder Shores of Loving and the Wilder Shores of Everything. So her house was an extraordinary mixture of gorgeous carpets and rugs and Qajar court paintings and samovars. And I mean, it really, but it's sort of a very eclectic, but altogether wonderful. It was kind of like you might imagine a 1001 Nights, Sherezade.
She does say that people stared at her on the street. Definitely.
Well, she did. You see, she dressed way back in the 40s and 50s, before what is now, I suppose, known as boho chic, was made popular by people like Yves Saint Laurent, or also the hippies, when she used to go down with friends, because she lived in the south of France when she wasn't travelling. When she used to go down into the village, they'd all laugh at her, and they were all the old hippies, her and her friends. They were known as old hippies. This is back in the 50s and 60s.
So can you describe what she'd be wearing?
So she'd wear amazing sort of silk pantaloons and one of those sort of long tunic coats, which are very embroidered and brocaded. And they would come from, I'm just trying to think which.
She'd wear kind of slippers and bells and jewellery.
But looked in a rather artlessly effortless kind of way. It was just normal somehow.
She was always clinking when you met her, probably.
Quite, yes. And there were scarves and things.
Yeah.
Yes.
Fabulous. Well, she's very beautiful, I've seen in the pictures. For listeners who don't know Leslie, can you describe her personality?
She was extremely funny, very warm, very, very bright, very intelligent. So also it was quite, she was had a very good mind. She was a great romantic, but she also had a very good mind and really knew her stuff. So, you know, I didn't want to be wrong. I didn't want to make mistakes.
So you're a little bit scared, a tiny bit.
But she was darling and loving and just the most wonderful friend. And also, a writer recently asked me what is a bohemian mindset? What is the avant-garde, really? And I would say, really, she was tolerant. She was open-minded. And that went right to the end of her life. The last thing we did together was her website, which went live the year before she died.
Fantastic.
And I remember when she was shown what a website was, and the designer, he was very clever, he described it like a large magazine in the sky, so to speak, because she had been features editor of Vogue during World War II. So that was a good way for her to see.
Yes.
And she absolutely, she beamed. She was about 100. Twinkle, twinkle, her wonderful forget-me-not blue eyes twinkling with delight. I want one of those, she said. None of that, ooh, I can't be dealing with the internet that I'm afraid some of the older generation do. She absolutely, so she was open to ideas, open to innovation, full of curiosity, very mischievous, Freudian slip, oh dear, very mischievous, very funny. But she, if she didn't particularly like your get on with you, then I must admit, oula, she didn't suffer fools gladly. So she did have a rather frosty grande dame side, which occasionally made an appearance. It was extraordinary, the private and the public, that having led, especially in the 50s, a very, very public life, because she ended up in Hollywood with her writer husband of 18 years, Romain Gary, who was a big, big novelist in France. So she did all the history. She was writing about history and women doing their thing, and he was writing novels. So she really knew, I mean, she had been up there. And so, you know, she adopted, I guess that's perhaps what very successful people do. You adopt, you have a, you know, a public persona. Mm. And she understood all that, how you had a public versus private persona.
She sounds so interesting. Tell us about her romantic obsession with the East and how that came about.
Well, that came as a child. She was an only child, grew up in Chiswick. Yeah. And she had quite an unorthodox childhood, because then Edwardian Chiswick really was totally a suburb, and she went to St. Paul's and then the Slade School of Art.
So she was bright.
So she was very bright. Yeah, well, her mother, of course, was very keen on the suffragettes, very keen for her daughter to have a good education. And I think, yes, that it was get out and be independent.
Well, you know that this area, particularly Chiswick, was very left-wing and liberal-minded.
Well, that chimes exactly. Yeah. So there we are. So she grew up, and then it was a family friend who came. And I mean, it was all... She could be very tight-lipped. We talked quite a bit about her childhood because of her posthumous memoirs, which came out a couple of years ago. The paperback is now out with Virago. In that she writes about Chiswick and the different Chiswicks. But there were the friends, there were quite a few family friends, but she didn't talk about them that much. But one of them was Theodore Komisarzewski, it turns out. He only was ever referred to as the traveller by her. But he was a Russian impresario, theatre man, brought Chekhov to Barnes, and was a friend of her parents.
She fell desperately in love with him.
Indeed. Well, he was obviously a mesmeric, extraordinary character, but also a great seducer.
So how old was she?
Well, she was about 17 or 18. So, yes, no, that I
so
must admit.
So she was quite seducing, easy to seduce, a 17-year-old.
Well, I guess. No, that one, people have different views about that. I will.
And he let her down terribly, didn't he?
Well, he did. I mean, they worked together. And so she worked after leaving the Slade School of Art. She was a set designer, theatre designer, costumes, and a lot of her work in 1934, there was an exhibition of European theatre art at MoMA in New York. And 8 of her designs were included.
So she did do well. That's incredible.
But she was devastated because in the end, he went off with Peggy Ashcroft, the actress. So, and that was, I guess by then, that was in the early 30s. So some time had lapsed.
That completely turned her on to the East, and she literally was magnetised by Eastern men, the East,
he was a great storyteller. Mm. I mean, that's the thing. So I think through him, actually, she really learnt the art of storytelling.
Wow.
She really, and he obviously was quite a mesmeric individual. And she was a fantastic storyteller. She somehow brought, and that's what she does in her books. Okay, she's a historian, but the way she tells a story, you are absolutely drawn in to something very seductive.
But also, I love her writing because it's also, there's a wit about it as well. You know, it's not just, she's not romantic. She's also got a bit of cynicism in it as well, which makes it really funny.
Oh, she was very absurd. No, she wasn't pink and fluffy at all, though she was rather glamorous and beautifully dressed in her boho way. But no, nothing pink and fluffy remotely about Leslie. She was actually pretty tough as old boots on one level. I mean, I think all the women
then, generation had to be.
They had to be, yeah, because
it
was pretty
tough.
Being a woman then, you were really expected to be a good girl, be quiet, shut up, do the dishes, be a good wife, have have children, don't rock the boat, was the conditioning. And she kind of did rock the boat. She got out there and did her thing. And I think pre that whole generation of women who became very successful in the 50s, and she's by no means the only one, but they were real trailblazers. It was tough. Yeah. So you had to have a pretty thick skin because you had a lot of flack.
No, absolutely.
For not towing the line.
Totally agree. So she was an artist before she could write, and I think that's one another key to her style, because it's very visual, isn't it, her writing?
Yes, it's true. I hadn't... She brings to life, the sort of drama. She's a dramatist when she writes, absolutely.
Yeah, fantastic. So she just had so much style. Tell us more about her life and living in many countries, because that obviously was a massive influence on her.
Well, to begin with, she was in London. So initially Chiswick, Richmond, and then...
With the Russian influence.
With the Russian influence. And then she was in the theatre. And then she completely, when everything went topsy-turvy, and then also her father. I mean, her father died in 1933, I think it was, anyway, it was roughly the same year, 33, 34, when also Comrade Sajewski went off with Peggy Ashcroft. And she basically completely reinvented herself. So the writing, that piece, Anti-Beige, she did bits and pieces of... There's a poster she designed... that's in London Underground Museum. She was a commercial artist, odd jobbing. Wow. She worked for probably one of the first marketing agencies in London. And she odd jobbed around. But her piece, Anti-Beige, for Harpers and Queen, 1935, was spotted by Alison Settle, who was the editor of Vogue, who hired her. So then the new career, and this is the thing, she reinvented herself about three times. So the second reinvention was... She ended up featured editor of Vogue during the war. And she always was interested about women, writing about women. She did features about women's services with Lee Miller, the photographer who took the photos. And she worked with Cecil Beaton. She was kind of imagined like a cultural blogger, if you like. She wrote a column. Now she'd be writing a blog, basically. And then she met a rather gorgeous young French Russian Polish airman fighting for de Gaulle with the Free French at a party in London, and he was 10 years younger than her, and they got married, and then began now comes at last. And she was always very grateful to the fact that marrying him meant that she actually could travel. So in 1946 she left to join him in Sofia in the Balkans, and then she never came back to England after that, unless as a visitor. Of course she came back to see her mother and friends and things, but then she always lived... They were en poste, so they were in the Balkans, and they went to Bern in Switzerland and then New York, where her first successful book was published in 1954, and they ended up in Hollywood. And then she always had a base, even after they divorced. She lived in the south of France and then went on, did a lot of travelling in the 60s and 70s, both writing books and doing a lot of journalism. She was commissioned by Diane of Reeland, who was the great...
Yes, I want to talk about that.
American Vogue.
Yeah, do you want a sip of tea? Because you're getting a bit dry on the throat.
Sorry.
It's okay. Because this is live, so but you really will hear Georgia drinking her tea. So that's one of the things I wanted to talk about. I wanted to say that, can you tell us about Camels at Dawn, the fashion shoot in the desert commissioned by the great Diane of Reeland?
In the introduction to Far to Go and Many to Love, I interviewed Susan Train, who was my co-executor. This is based on a big interview, and she was bureau chief of Paris Condé Nast for many years. And so she, Leslie as the writer, and Henry Clark, the photographer, wonderful photographer, who I'm sure listeners, they would know his photos rather than his name, probably, because he's one of the iconic photographers of the 50s and 60s. So they were all sent off to do a great photo shoot about 3 weeks or a month.
I think it was three weeks
in the Syrian desert and Petra. And
they went to Aleppo.
And she adored Syria, all the places now. And there was a very funny description of how one of the shoots on one of the shoots, for example, Leslie was extraordinary because, and they do say, what is it, 80% of our communication actually is non-verbal. Well, she obviously had very good non-verbal communication because she immediately befriended everybody and they were all having mint tea and tents and all the rest of it. But one of the shoots, the models were obviously stunning. And there were two soldiers guarding a tiny little fort in the desert, and one of them absolutely fell for one of the models and really wanted to go off with her and make her his bride. Well, I somehow, alas, I can't quite see a similar thing happening now. It might have rather unfortunate circumstances. So also anecdotes like that from her life and work, now, given how everything has developed, there's something, well, apart from the tragedy of it all, there's something rather wonderfully naive and insouciant that in the 60s and 70s you could travel about and appreciate. She was massively appreciative of the cultures. She, you know, she actually learned and taught me a lot about. She adored Afghanistan. She went there a lot. She taught me a lot about it and the culture. You never hear much in the media about the actual, the culture, the arts, the writing, the ideas. You don't hear that, which I think is a terrible pity, but I'm grateful to Leslie for having taught me a great deal because it gives you depth and understanding.
It does. And the open mind, which is the key to an interesting life.
Exactly.
Leslie also did some food writing. Can you tell us about that?
Oh yes. Well, her cooking was interesting. It was Russian. She was very influenced by all the Russian. Was it piroshki and there was something she used to do. Sort of livers cooked with. I can't remember.
Was it nice?
Some of her cooking I loved and some less. But she did Balkan dishes with yogurt and peppers, which was rather delicious.
And no one did that. Then,
and couscous. Yeah. No, and all those sort of couscousy times of kinds of lovely. No, so it was rather delicious. But she also she mixed in. I mean, her English roots. She was absolutely English too. So I used to travel with steak and kidney pies in my suitcase to take them to her. I would take her packets of suet and sausages, and she loved all that too. And she was an extraordinary blending. It's like she, you know, you like the basics were of course very British, but then adored other cultures and other foods and other books. And
It's like with a tree, if
you cut a tree, you see there are rings and rings and rings. And it was all, in the end, sort of somehow part of her. And it was wonderful.
What about Leslie getting to the great age of 103? You said about the website at the beginning that she understood that. I mean, did she keep going all that time?
Yes, she did. I mean, she used to, I think she, all her friends died off. Yeah. But she had a gift of friendship, so she made new friends. A lot of the children of her friends became friends. Mm. And she was just such fun to be with that also one didn't really think about age altogether. Mm. Mm. Though sometimes, suddenly, she'd be shocked about something or and you'd think, that's interesting, and remember that she was 100.
Fabulous, so you could forget her age.
Somehow,
isn't that a dream? That's what we really want, isn't it?
Well, she also, I mean, I think the curiosity and the interest in life, she didn't shut down, she didn't give up, perhaps, that's the thing. The curiosity was there, the wanderlust as well.
So you've mentioned before, but throughout her writing life, she explored the different roles of women, mother, life, mistress, muse, or slave. Mm-hmm. She was very romantic about polygamy and the harem and wearing the burqa. Can you tell us her take on that?
Oh, my goodness. Well, she was actually quite a pragmatist. So she believed that it was good to look at other systems, let's say families and marital systems, and not just write them off the way the West tends to be rather, we know best. You know,
when I see someone in a burqa, I feel sorry for them. But in the book, she says that these women are so pleased to be hidden away.
But now it has been politicised, of course. That is, I think when she was writing that, it wasn't quite political, quote-unquote, the way it has become. Mm. And also there are different, I know that I do not know enough, but depending on which culture and which country there are different, which
absolutely.
Faith system there are different stipulations. And actually I've still got her copy of the Quran, and she showed me passages out of it, and it's actually not what, let us say, we are led to believe by the mainstream.
No, of course not. No, I was bought the Quran by an Afghani friend when I was 19. It's beautiful. Mm-hmm. So I just want to ask about about her views though on, because she actually thought harems were great. She loved the idea of loads of women being together.
Yes, well, she adored the company of men, but she had a lot of very good friends and relished female company. And also all her books, I mean, apart from her own life going off, her books, the famous one, The Wilder Shores of Love, which came out in 54, is about four women going east, escaping the constraints and conventions of European society. That in this book that's just come out, Far to Go and Many to Love, we have Lise Christiani, a cellist, wandering further and further and further into the Siberian wastes, playing her cello.
And it's all true.
She always wrote about women doing extraordinary things. Mm. And Aurélie Picard, a rather pragmatic little French lady, who ends up marrying, I love it, the mighty prince Si Mohamed Sighir, the marabout and absolute ruler of the Tejianis. I mean, hello. It's extraordinary. And
she ends up in the desert. And she insists on French furniture, chandeliers.
Yeah, and she builds this place called Courdan. I think it's Courdan. I hope I've got that right. So Leslie was fascinated by women. Yes, women out getting out doing their own thing was very much...
But that's exactly what reflected in her life as well. So she was writing about... These women probably spurred her on as well.
I think so. Yeah. But she also was an odd paradox because she was also quite submissive and quite domestic she was very submissive to... Her great love, who was Romain Gary. So it's interesting. She was both submissive and also quite strong.
Well, you could say that means she's a woman. She's a woman.
Yes, I guess. Yeah.
You know,
I guess,
to have a feminine side is not a bad thing, and I think that's one of the things that feminism is bad. That it's why should I don't want to act like a man.
Well, she didn't. It's interesting that you bring that up because on one hand, she very much thought it was very important, equal pay, equal rights, etc.
We all think that,
but she did not. Not believe at all. She rather turned all that business about burning bras. She used to say rather scathingly, she was like, why can't I wear a bra? And she used to joke about, well, I need it. Anyway, there we are. Yeah. But, you know, and I suppose that was her. So she was a mixture.
Yes, we're all a mixture. Exactly. And that's what the great thing about being a woman is. We have choices, you know, and we can choose whatever we like to be, you know. Mm. And we mustn't let anybody else judge us, you know, not other women as well, which I think is another thing that happens. Women judge other women.
Unfortunately.
Which hopefully she doesn't do. Now, Georgia, can you tell us some amazing memories of Leslie and how she's influenced your life?
Oh, my goodness. Well, she was at my
What was the age difference then? Because you're young.
About 40, was it 40, 50 years? I mean, yes, 50. I mean, she was at my...
How did your mother know christening. Her or father?
Yes, so my mother was younger than her, but she was born in the 20s. Very beautiful writer, artist, photographer who worked with Magnum photographers. And she had rather an extraordinary bohemian life too, and married three times, called Gail Elton Mayo. And she met Leslie, her first Russian husband. Well, Russian, her first husband was Russian.
So they met in New York.
And
totally.
It's the Russian husbands. Yeah. It was the Russian. She managed to get out of Nazi-occupied France, age 17, with her much older Russian husband in World War II.
So was she Jewish?
No, she wasn't Jewish. She was British Australian.
So she just wasn't French.
But she was married to a Russian.
Get out.
She was married to a Russian. Mm. And they were, the Russian, all the white Russians
of
were
course.
Referred to as apatride.
Yeah.
She was British with a passport, but it was better to get out.
Yeah.
And she was supposed to go to the camp for women in Besançon. And wouldn't have none of that. So they had to escape across the lines. She gave birth. It's all in actually her memoir, The Mad Mosaic. She writes, it's an extraordinary escape story, how they get out.
So was she quite old when she had you?
Yes, she was in her 40s when she had me. So there was a big gap between children and husbands. And those women then, they had quite, what I suppose you might call colourful lives. She was a lovely woman, but quite a bit of a gypsy like Leslie. And they met in New York in the 40s. Mm. It was thanks to the Russian husbands. Because, of course, you're all Russians, you're all exiles, you're all outsiders, so you all hang out together. Yeah. I mean, it's the British wives and the Russian husbands, and they stayed great friends. So years later, when I came along in the 60s, my French father in Paris was very fond of her. She loved him. She used to come to dinner with her great friend Nancy Mitford. So Leslie and Nancy, and also Yusupov, Prince Yusupov, who killed Rasputin.
Yeah.
Anyway, there were a lot of Russians in Paris, so they all used
to come. She'd love that.
So I have memories of all the Russian activity, a lot of Russians, Russian emigres coming for dinner. And she was always there. And then later, when I set up my company, Book Blast Limited, in the late 90s, it's a consultancy, editing, translating, agenting, and also at the moment we're doing more online promotion because it's a good platform. But that's a whole other independent. The independent sector.
That's another interview with
Indie publishing. Very interesting. The independent sector is absolutely thriving.
Yeah,
a lot of good stuff going on.
Yeah.
Anyway, but she was very, very supportive because it's a lot of it. Of course, one has experience and contacts, but there's also an element of trial and error, and she was fantastically supported. And she was one of the early supporters of Book Blast, which I always think. And she was very keen. You've got to get out and do your thing, and so
gave you the confidence.
Yeah.
Again,
there are days when I got a bit despondent. So she would be absolutely sweet and crack jokes down
and
the phone.
And it's brilliant because that's
she was.
You know, she was living the life that she, inspire other women.
Exactly.
You know,
exactly.
And she sounds honestly. When I honestly enjoyed it so much, the book.
Well, it was amazing in Paris with some friends. I met the wonderful Marianne Faithfull, and it was amazing that Marianne looked at me and, Leslie Blanche was your godmother. And I looked at her and think, So she inspired people like Marianne Faithfull. Even I discovered, I was quite surprised because I discovered a lot of things after she died. Mm. Because she didn't, oddly, she was quite discreet. She didn't sit and blow her trumpet and boast and things.
Yeah, especially that generation.
And she, when I had a 1-hour telephone conversation with the writer Shirley Conran, and she told me that Jackie Kennedy was a fan and used to write to her, and there were a whole batch of letters from Jackie Kennedy to Leslie Blanche, which disappeared.
Oh, no.
Well, the housekeeper, that was the general suspicion, is one of the housekeepers or friend or somebody took them.
That'd be
a pity, because it would have been interesting.
Lovely to see, yeah.
But so I was rather... I was like, goodness.
You didn't know. This is my godmother. What?
I didn't realize she's an amazing woman, but I hadn't
You didn't know
that,
she was as big as, and that's rather lovely that you have this relationship, this kind of lovely, loving, simple relationship. Mm. Yeah. Mm. You weren't impressed by...
No. Yeah. Well, no, it's indeed.
Oh, well, Far to Go, Money to Love is published by Leslie Blanche. Sorry, it's published by Quartet.
And
it's by Leslie Blanche, and it's out now. Is there anything else you want to say?
And it's the follow-on, it's the sequel to the posthumous memoirs, which came out 2 years ago with Virago, called On the Wilder Shores of Love, A Bohemian Life, and the paperback is now out. So they make a very nice complimentary read.
Exactly. Thank you so much for coming on to Radio
Well, Gorgeous. Thank you, and thank all of you.
So for more extraordinary women, go to radiogorgeous.com.